Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I am an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs, the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Macy Stewart, Lucy Liu, Gelato Negro, Craig Davis, Sam Sadomski, Damon Locke, Sarah Bell Reed. The list goes on and on and on and on. This week, I'm thrilled to have Joy Guidry. I have been a huge fan of Joy's for a long time. Well, long time, I don't know. It's all relative. Long time and whatever. For like, ever since I heard, it was before her first record. I think there was like an EP or something that came out before that. Anyway, she's a bassoonist and a composer and a ton of things. But I had this moment, and it was around, it must have been like 2021, when I was having a bassoon moment where I was just like really obsessed with the bassoon, even to the point where I explored lessons, which would have been, I didn't do that, but, and sometimes I regret that. But anyway, I was just looking for quote unquote experimental bassoon music and came across some various things. And Joy was one of those artists, and her work immediately struck me. And it's just been, she has been releasing album after album that are, oh my God, she's incredible. She's really, you know, people talk about pushing boundaries as that's kind of like hyperbole, but she really is. And then her newest album, Five Prayers, which just came out, is for me like the sort of like clearest distillation of her vision to this point. And it's such a beautiful record. And it's one of those ones where it feels simultaneously like this, like exclamation or culmination, but it's also the springboard where I know it's like, God, this is incredible. And I know that she's just going to like, what's next is going to be even more, you know? So, I was really excited to get her on the show, and, we went on a journey. We had a lot of technical difficulties, but we made it through. We got everything on here. I don't even think you'll really notice, thanks to my editing skills. I don't know, but I appreciate Joy so much for like pushing through and, you know, making it happen. So please check out Five Prayers. It's an amazing album. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Yeah. My guest today is a musician, a composer, a bassoonist, an improviser, performance artist. It's Joy Guidry. Woo! Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So you've got a new record called Five Prayers, and it is out on May 16th on Jade Records.
Yes.
One of the things, as I was just saying to you, I love the record. One of the things that excites me so much about your work is, and this is super random, but I don't know. It may have been around the time that I first heard your stuff, but like, I had this moment where I was really obsessed with the bassoon. Like, I don't play bassoon or anything. Like, most of what I do is with electronics and synthesizers, but I don't even know why. I just got obsessed with, I just love how a bassoon sounds. And then hearing it in this context and like more like outside of, you know, orchestras or whatever is awesome. So I'm really curious, like how you, in like when you started playing the bassoon, how you chose the bassoon or the bassoon chose you. I don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting story. So I actually started playing music, I guess studying in sixth grade, and I would play some saxophone. Mm. And it was something that like was more so pushed for me to do by my parents. I remember I wanted to play oboe and they were like, what is that? And I was like, actually, I don't know either. So, I ended up playing saxophone. And when I got to high school, I became like obsessed with music, especially classical music. Which I wish I had an obsession of jazz back then, but we cannot rewrite history. Right. So, I started learning much more about music theory, and I took music theory in high school, and we went over Tchaikovsky and Stravinsky and Brahms and Beethoven, everyone. And I was like, oh my God, saxophone is not an orchestra. Like when it is, it's like twice, you know? So I was like, what am I going to do with my life? So I figured out that I really like the bassoon. And I was raised in a way that, like, I can do anything. Like, my mom never made me feel inadequate. So when I told her, I was like, I think I want to try this new instrument and stuff. She was like, well, I just literally bought you a new saxophone. So we're definitely doing that. But for sure, like, have fun. And I was like, yeah, of course. So I got a bassoon in going into my senior year of high school. And I just learned it on the side. I was getting ready for college auditions and things like that. And just kind of figuring out what, you know, what I was going to do with the rest of my life at 17, right, which was kind of crazy. But yeah, so I just practiced bassoon a lot over the summer throughout the school year. It's like a really fun escapism. That's awesome. For me. And I pick up instruments very, very fast. So by the time, like, the spring semester of my senior year, so almost a year later, I had, like, a good fundamental understanding of how to play.
Wow.
So my band director would, like, let me try it out in, like, the lower ensembles. And then we played Lincoln Sharp Posey. And there's this huge bassoon part. I mean, pretty much all over it. But he let me give it a go in rehearsal one day. And it went really well. And I was like, okay, I love the sound that this instrument makes. I love how it blends. I love, like, all I knew at that time was wind ensemble, like playing in wind ensembles. So I really loved the way, like, bassoon, bass clarinet, oboe, English horn blended. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it was just, like, the most beautiful thing to me. So I knew that I now was going to become a bassoonist. My mom did not know this. So, yeah, I went to college. I went to Stephen F. Austin State University for a year and a half. And I got in on bassoon, which was insane.
Wow.
But, yeah, it was really interesting. And I started picking it up, like, faster and faster. And my teacher at the time was like, well, you're, like, you're not having a good time here. Because of, like, the politics of that part of Texas. Mm-hmm. And I just, like, had bigger dreams than what that school could offer me. So she's like, have you ever heard of a conservatory before? And I was like, I don't think so. And she's like, have you heard of Juilliard? And I was like, oh, yeah. And she's like, that's a conservatory. And I was like, oh, okay, cool, cool, cool. Definitely knew I was not at the place to get in there. So, I took some auditions, and one of the places to audition was Peabody Conservatory at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. And the professor just truly saw all of my potential. I worked so hard on the audition, and it went really well. And I remember when we had, like, our private lesson after the audition to see if we were a good match. He was like, oh, like, how long have you been playing? And I was like, oh, like, kind of like almost 2 years at this point. And he was like, what?
Wow.
And I was like, yeah. And he was like, yeah, okay, cool, like, this was really great. So I, like, kind of knew I got in the bag,
right?
Like, I got my email, got my letter, and I was like, oh my god, I'm going to Johns Hopkins. So
awesome.
When I was there, I just, like, fell in love with bassoon, but it became, like, this very competitive thing. I was like, I have to be the best. I want to be in Boston Symphony. I want to do this. But I still love the instrument. And a really close friend of mine back then was a composer. Well, they're still a composer, but they were like, you should try play contemporary music. And I was like, well, what's that? And they showed me, and I was like, no. One thing they showed me was by a bassoonist, Rebecca Heller, playing it. And I wasn't having a great time at Peabody with my professor. So we weren't really seeing eye to eye, and I ended up reaching out to Rebecca Heller in 2017. And that literally changed the rest of my life. She, like, completely took me under her wing. She really helped guide me to exactly where I am today. It was a lot of tough love, but we got there. She taught me so many techniques on bassoon, introduced me to so many of, like, the greats, like Lisa E. Harris, Montana Roberts, who else? Tyshawn Story, George Lewis, Mass Swift. Like, she was the gateway for me to all of those people that are huge parts of my life today. And, you know, and years go by, she ends up becoming my teacher in grad school. She was bringing me into places, into rooms that, like, a lot of young Black artists weren't being brought into, mm-hmm. you know? And she showed me the ropes of this industry. Not so much the music, like, you know, music TM sure. industry, but, like, more so, like, the art world and things like that. And She is one of the main reasons I got booked at The Kitchen to play when I was 24, you know? So like, awesome. I owe her so much. And if she'll hear this, you'd be like, you don't owe me anything, you know? But like, it literally changed my life. Like through meeting her, I met Lisa Harris, who is like the big cousin, big sister I've always wanted. And Lisa Harris is a interdisciplinary artist from Houston. I'm from Houston. So we relate so much on everything. And it's like, it's really beautiful now. Like, she's also introduced me to so many people, showing me different parts of my artistry that Rebecca was like giving me peeks into. Mm-hmm. But with the cultural differences, you know, sometimes it is kind of hard to relate artistically all the time. But with Lisa, it was like, oh, we are from the same seed, you know, like right. We're from the same tree. Right. So things like that. And it just like opened up so much more. And like both of these women guided me so much. And now, I mean, Lee has given me so many opportunities. And I'm in a place now where like, you know, 5 years later, after 5 or 6 years later after meeting her, I'm like now kind of calling. And it's amazing. And like Bassoon has just like developed in my mind into this beautiful voice. Yeah. It has turned into an engine of my soul that is really heard through Five Prayers. And one of the places I'm most excited to play it at soon is the Metropolitan Museum of Art, you know, in New York. And I'm like,
amazing.
I still can't believe this happening. And I called Lee and I was like, hey girl, like, you want to play with me? Yeah. And she's awesome. Like, where? And I'm like, I met. So it's just like, it's like giving back to your mom, you know? So, it's incredible. And like Bassoon has just been such this interesting journey, but like, that's kind of like, that's the heart head of it, of how at least I play the instrument.
That's amazing. What a story. That is a great story. I'm really glad I asked. Well, it kind of leads me into, you were talking about how, you know, it's like this extension of you now. You've gotten to that point. And one of the things that I think you said in relation to this record, and it was how this record kind of came from a part of your body you hadn't tapped into in a while, I think was how. And I'm curious what that means for you, like how Five Prayers maybe felt different than previous works.
Yeah, I mean, Five Prayers was not supposed to be an album. I think that is the kind of big thing about this project. It literally started off as a single, the Convince Me to Stay. I started working on that song just for fun. And it just, I don't know, it just kept growing and I kept improvising, getting ready for these shows. And I was like, wait, no, that's a song. Okay, no, that's a awkward song. And I'd say the other big difference is just like, while the trauma in my life is still quite intense, the way I am processing it is so different. If we go back to Radical Acceptance and we go back to Inner Child, you know, track three, it is a cacophony. It's beautiful, you know. Mm-hmm. It's probably one of the most free jazz-esque things I've ever put out, and I was 26. So that means I played at The Kitchen when I was 25. So I'll add 1 year to my life. But so I was 26, and like I was going through so much. It was before I transitioned. I was trying to figure out so much. I was so angry all the time. Mm-hmm. And now I still have that anger. I have so much like sadness that we'll get into later about this album. And like, I was just processing so much. And I'm just in a place now where like with this processing, I just wanted to make something so beautiful. I wanted to make something that was comforting for me and not in a way of like being cathartic, but more so like, okay, no, like literally I can go back and listen to this when I'm sad. Like that's the purpose of writing this music. And I had a very clear story when getting ready for this album. And like, I mean, this is like kind of a little heavy, but things got really bad in the last year, mental health wise, like really, really bad. And when I was talking to one of my best friends, Jeremy, and he was like, well, what's the next record gonna be like? And I was like, what if it's like my funeral playlist? I know that's horrible to say, but it's just like, oh my God, things got so dark. Right. And I was like, I could not see my way out of it. And I was like, I'm gonna make the most beautiful music ever. So it's kind of like, okay, if my time did come in the next year or so, mm-hmm. like this is something I can leave my friends with, leave my family with, of just like a true testament of like how I see the world and like the beauty I hear in the world, even though that like I feel like just horrible. Right. So the writing process of this album, every song was me practicing escapism. Like, I was so broke, still broke, but I was so broke for the last year, and I had Ableton. I was like, well, you know what? There's a lot I can learn in here, right, and that is free. It's prepaid. So I was just like trying to learn so many new production techniques. I was trying to, yeah, just grow as an artist electronically and things like that. And that's really how all of this happened. It was just so much exploration. And like, I just felt like I had the true freedom to do whatever I wanted. But also, I wanted to practice this other form of my writing, of like long form writing, mm-hmm, and just very ambient and minimalistic and like experimental, but not so much living in the free jazz world.
Right.
And I was like, what does an ambient Bassoon album sound like? And then I did it.
Yeah, it sounds like this. No, I think that's, yeah, I think that's really, I mean, that's something I've been thinking about quite a bit lately. Like, what, when you're in these moments of whether it's like personal fracture and darkness, or I mean, the world around us, we can all see all the shit, but like, kind of what can grow from there, and what, mm-hmm, and I think like that, like what you were just talking about, and with this record, I think that's really, yeah, that resonates very deeply with me, because it's, what a approach to that moment of like, well, I'm going to make this beautiful thing to, yeah. And you know, and here we are a year later talking about it. So that's even better.
Yes. Yeah.
Was there anything that like about the process that really like surprised you, that came up, I don't know, musically, emotionally, even, I guess you were talking about learning Ableton and stuff, but the things that you didn't expect?
Oh yeah, I didn't expect to be crying all the time. Oh my god, like, I cried so much. Like, it's, yeah, I mean, in life generally, like, one thing about me, I'm a cry. But like, when I was specifically recording the last track, I Know You're Always With Me, I had such, mm-hmm, a vision for that song, and nothing was coming together. And then I was like, okay, hold on, like, let's regroup. So I had the drones ready, and like, I sat with the drones alone for probably like 3 weeks until, wow, I could get back into the studio. And then when I got my studio time, finally, I was downstairs. I don't know if you've ever been to Figure Eight Recording in Brooklyn. It's an incredible studio. And yeah, I was chilling down there, super cozy, and I could not get the music out. And then I finally was like, all right, now what is the name of this album? It's Five Prayers. So I was like, let me just pray. And I like said a prayer, and all of this music started flowing. And then I was like, okay, I should actually layer a little bassoon here. I should do that. And it's like, pushing myself in that way, pushing, yeah, myself in a really deep way. But I didn't expect to feel so comforted throughout this process. I didn't expect to not feel so stressed. And like, when I say I had $5 and a fucking dream for this album, there was no budget. Like, it was fucking crazy. And I was like, I'm going to be independent. I'm going to have my own label, and this is all going to work out. Like, I just kept telling myself that. Yeah. I listened to Cool Soul more than like anything ever. And like, I needed to manifest. And like, when, I think like truly in the end, I just didn't expect this to happen. Like, I didn't expect it to really come together the way it did. Awesome. And it just showed me that like, I can't just write about my music being spiritual. I can't live some like persona of like hashtag spiritual jazz, you know? Right. Like, it is a life. Yeah. It is like, it has to be in me. It has to, like, my ego cannot exist. I cannot worry about what review is going to come, you know? And that is something that like was haunting me, yeah, throughout the process of making this album, because with A Man, like, I put so much into it, mm-hmm, and it was received so well. And like, I love meeting people, and they're like, oh, like, I love your music. I love Angels off of Fame. You know, I'm like, oh, thanks, right, thanks, you know? But it was like quite wild to go from like my first album, Radical Acceptance, I didn't know shit about press. And then like everything was happening. Right. I was like, whoa. And then A Man, and it was almost like radio silence, yeah, you know? And I was like, what is going on? And it fucked me up. It fucked me, sure, up so bad. Mm-hmm. So I had to like unlearn so much. I did not expect to grow as a person while making an album like this. You know, right, I like said that, I was like, so much has changed in my life while making A Man. No, like, so much has changed since making. Little did I know. Oh, it was really a thing of this last year of like, okay, like I want to grow as an artist. I want to go on these tours. I want to, you know, have more visibility, X, Y, Z, all of these things, but I want to do it from a place of intention. I want to have music that truly speaks for my soul. I want to have music that represents me even when I'm not here anymore. And like, things are going to take time. Yeah. Things are going to take time. And that was like the biggest lesson I learned throughout all of this. While this album was written fairly fast, I will say, but just like the messages I was hearing from my family, my super close friends, because another thing that changed this last year, I like my circles got a lot smaller and things, and it was my choice and I was happy to make that choice. But yeah, I just had to listen to people around me more. I had to listen to myself more and really realize that like, if I'm going to call this album Five Prayers, I need to live that. So I spoke to myself in such a gentle way. I pushed myself harder in this last year than I have ever pushed myself in my life. Not just with music, just by like going and like trying to keep my head up, trying to finish this PhD, trying to, I don't know, just figure so much out. And I just did not expect writing five ambient songs to make me reevaluate my entire existence. But it did. And I'm so happy to be on the other side and like, I can't believe it's out in a week. You know, I guess like once this airs.
But Yeah.
Well, it just like, it's incredible. And I'm so excited to just like people to see my musical growth and see the growth of my production style and see the growth of my vision. And like, but don't get attached. Cause like this next album, it might be a metal album. You know, who knows? Like, I feel like I do that each album. I just like change my entire
but, I love it and I respect it's like, oh, I've been doing this thing, people are excited about it, well, we're done with that then, let's
exactly.
Well, I hope I you know, I don't name these episodes other than like the name of the artist, but somebody needs to do an interview or something and write an article that's Five Prayers, $5 in a fucking dream, and
exactly
the story of this record. Well, that's awesome. That is yeah, that's great. And I'm like I said, I love the record. I guess it,
thank you.
I guess I'd talk about it more, but then we'd be here forever because we got a bunch of songs to talk about.
I mean, feel free, you know.
But one of the things that I love about doing the show is I feel like I learn so much about people just by talking about the songs they pick. So this is my awkward segue into the into the list. So as always, the first question I'm gonna ask there is, what's the first song that you remember?
The first song I remember is On and On by Erykah Badu.
What a place to start. Jeez.
Yeah, I don't know how it is, but like when I think about my childhood, I remember that song playing all the time because I grew up with a mom who's like in love with Jill Scott and like all neo soul known to man. So that song was playing a lot.
I don't know. I remember when it was really weird, like when this album came out. So I was, this came out like 96 or 7. So I was a teenager, but I would like it just come out of my sort of punk phase. Like this was not the music I listened to at all, except for then the job I had. I became really good friends with this person who was super into like 90s R&B, and we would listen to this album all the time. And so it has this really, I don't know, special place to me. I don't know. I love this stuff. I mean, Erykah Badu is amazing.
Amazing.
Whenever I was prepping for this, I was revisiting her Tiny Desk concert the other day, and there's a version of, I mean, it's like two songs because it's like, well, I can't remember the first song, and it's like a 12 minute version of Green Eyes, which is anyway, I don't know, I'm rambling, but yeah,
that's really,
so this was like you said, was there a lot of music being like in the house growing up? Was it there always stuff on the radio or on the stereo?
Pretty much, yeah. I would say that and Lifetime Movie Network. So that was happening a lot. It was a lot of gospel. It was a lot of India Irie, a lot of Yolanda Adams, Zydeco. Was more so at my grandparents' house, but just a lot of uplifting neo soul music.
That's cool. And you were saying, so your parents have been, your family has been very supportive of your musical. Well, I mean, I guess they kind of forced you into it to start.
They kind of, like, It's been confusing, I think. Yeah, I think it's been confusing for a lot of them, of kind of like, what is Joy doing with her life, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So they see me doing the shows and everything, but then they equate like being successful in music with having millions of streams, right. You know? And like, I don't fault them for that because I mean, yeah. That's kind of what the industry is telling sure. us. So I really think they didn't really lock into what I was doing until this last year, which was kind of annoying because like I've had a lot of my own personal success, you know, but I am like extremely grateful that Andre had me on one of his shows. But when my family saw that, they were like, oh shit, she's not fucking around, yeah. You know? So, I'm very grateful that finally opened my family's eyes last year after completing 3 degrees in music, but like, yeah, it's fun that they are like pretty locked in now, I would say.
Man, 3 degrees in music, but no, it takes Andre 3,000.
I mean, you know, working with Andre is like, yeah. That's like getting a degree, honestly.
Should, so. Yeah, right. Yeah. So really, in my mind, you have 4 degrees now.
Exactly.
Well, what is a song that makes you cry?
Definitely Know That You Are Loved by Cleo Soul.
That song is pretty, that's a stunning song. I don't even know what to say about it, but like, what a lyric. I know that you are loved.
Yeah.
On the flip side, what's a song that'll put you in a better mood?
Be Your Girl by Keishanada. Well, by Teedra Moss, but Keishanada remix.
Yeah, this is such a banger.
It is. And I like someone I was dating last year was like, I feel like every black woman that's a Brooklyn transplant, like that's all y'all listen to. And I'm like, well, it's for a reason. So
yeah, I mean, I don't know how you, like, this is one of those songs where I don't know how you listen to this and it, you can't sit still. Like, you have to get up and move.
Exactly.
And I feel like I feel like everything that I don't know, every like Keishanada remix, I don't know, he like never misses. yeah. Well, what is everybody's favorite question? What is objectively the greatest song of all time?
As by Stevie Wonder.
I can't believe I realized this week. Stevie's come up plenty of times on the show, but we've never had anybody pick a Stevie song for this question, and that kind of blows my mind.
Oh, I mean, yeah, I feel like he is the epitome of music.
Yeah.
You know, like. But especially that is still living. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can make a pretty good case that he's like the greatest songwriter ever, basically. Mm-hmm. Do you have like any memory of like when you like first hearing Stevie?
No, I don't have a first memory, but. Yeah, I don't remember the first time, but I did have a huge phase of listening to Stevie Wonder in undergrad. Uh-huh. I think I was feeling like really homesick. I mean, going to like a really white university will have you like tapping in to every source of blackness you can find. So I listened to I listened to a lot of Stevie Wonder from 2015 to 18. And then when I found, what is it? The Secret Life of Plants.
Oh, yeah.
That I was like, wait, what is this? And that kind of opened up like a whole other chapter of my life.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. One of the things I love about this song too, is the way, cause you know, there's, I don't know, it's like a recurring theme throughout music forever is like, oh, I could die tomorrow. But like the way he phrases it is what, like the, as today I know I'm living, but tomorrow could make me the past. God, what a great line.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then I don't know, on the bridge when he like totally changes his like the way
exactly.
I don't know if there are any other artists that could pull that off.
I know.
It's like, yeah, I don't know. It's, I love it. It's so great. Well, this to me, yeah, objectively, this feels like it's up there. It's the greatest song. What is a song that you used to love, but you heard it recently, or you think about it now and it doesn't really do it for you? It's just not. Nope.
Yeah, it would definitely be Silent Night by The Temptations.
Interesting.
So, yeah. I know.
Is it like what? So was this, I guess, I'm curious, like your history with it. So, I mean, I'm like, this is sort yes. of like, a, this is Temptation. It's like a Christmas staple in our house.
Exactly.
But now you just can't hang.
No, it's like, see, you're laughing. You're going to be like, oh, shit. No. So like,
oh, no.
I don't have the best relationship with my family. Okay. And so I've spent the last few Christmases alone, like literally alone. So that has been very tough.
Yeah.
And I keep trying to, and I know this is like a very, it's unfortunate how normal it is for so many Black trans women to have this experience. And I would say Black trans people in general, of just, yeah, I mean, it's yeah. religion fucks a lot of shit up.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like that's about to put that. And you know, me and my family are working on our relationship constantly, but it is a lifelong marathon is what I'm learning. But yeah, I just like accepted a couple years ago that like, as much as I love them, I also love myself. And like, just going back to Texas isn't the best thing for me. Mm-hmm. But what I will say on that is that Texas is in the South is so extremely demonized. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like when a lot of people talk about this story of the South or things like that, there's no nuance. Texas is one of probably the most radical places in this country, mm-hmm. you know, where there is so much oppression, there's equal or more people fighting against that oppression. We would not have Juneteenth without mm-hmm. Without the recently freed Africans in Galveston, Texas, you know, yeah. like that just is what it is, you know? So I say all of that to say, I'm not painting people in Texas as just this group of ignorant hillbillies, right, you know, right. because I live in Brooklyn and I can find people way more racist 20 miles away in Long Island. So, yeah, it's just a different culture sometimes. And like, you know, not really like seeing eye to eye, mm-hmm. but then also, I don't know. There's just a lot of factors. So, I haven't been home in a little bit. I haven't been home since I saw Renaissance in Houston. And I was even only there for like 2 days to see Beyonce. So, yeah, it's when I tried to like, you know, you try to do the thing of like ordering food that reminds you right. of Christmas or like all of that stuff and like listening to the old songs you used to. And I just like found myself crying so hard this past year. And I was like, yeah we have to cut this.
No, 100%.
Yeah, this is not going to work. But then, you know, Beyonce saves the day and does like a Christmas performance. So yeah, that was great.
There you go.
You know,
new tradition.
Exactly. I've just had to stop trying to force good feelings back into myself through nostalgia. Because mm-hmm. one day we'll all be okay again. Me and my family will be okay again. I'll have my own family and all of that jazz. Sure. And like, I'll come back to that song. And I'm not about to like beat a dead horse
right.
with a song that I have such great memories attached to.
Yeah, it's just trying to put it on the shelf for now.
Yeah. Exactly.
I get that. I mean, I live in Oklahoma, so all the stuff you're talking about with like the South and the like, I mean, people are always like, why do you live there? And it's like, well, yes, mm-hmm. there's plenty of terrible things, but there's also good things. And there's, yeah. And it's, I don't know, living here has made me more radical than I ever became when I lived in Seattle. So.
Exactly.
But it's also easy for someone like me to live here, and then, you know, I'm a white guy.
Yeah.
Like, let's be real.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, that makes total sense. Yeah, and now I feel bad for laughing. So.
No, <it's okay.
laughs> but hey, like, I'm glad Beyonce was there to start new traditions.
Oh, thanks. He's always here.
Well, on a different tangent here, what's a song that most people, I don't know who these people are, but some group of people hate this song, but you don't care. You love it anyway.
Definitely Not Another Love by Ella May. I don't get the hate, you know, like I love it. I'll put it on though, like at a pregame or, you know, just a hangout or whatever in the car. And we're like, can we pick another song? And I was like, just go with the vibes. Like, yeah. It's okay. It's such a fun song. I don't know. I love it.
So I didn't know this. This was like my first time hearing this when I was prepping for this. I was feeling it. I don't know. I'm surprised. Exactly.
You get it.
Yeah. Like it is a vibe. And I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. People need to chill out or something. I don't know. It seems like such a. I'm having a hard time imagining. How could you not want to hear this? Anyway, I don't know.
Exactly.
People are strange. What can we say? Well, what is. Well, first, do you think of yourself as a romantic?
I do. I'm a Libra. Okay. Very much.
Well, what is the most romantic song?
I think When I'm in Your Arms by Cleo Soul. That is like, I don't know. Like, I mean, I definitely want that song to be my wedding. Yeah. You know, like, I love that song so much. I love that woman so much. Like, she, not to go on an extreme tangent, but when I say, like, her music has guided me to peace the last, like, 3 years since I started listening to music. Yeah. Like, one of her songs, I do not remember which one, but it was on Insecure, the last season of Insecure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a cultural phenomenon. So when I heard that song, I was like, wait, who is this? So I went and I found Cleo Soul's whole discography. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, I'm pretty locked in now, you know, and I just saw her live in New York 2 years ago or so. And I was like, yeah, no, like you are the truth.
Yeah.
So hearing When I'm in Your Arms live, it had me text my ex. So and I had no shame. I was like, I feel it. This is the spirit talking to me. So, yeah, I think it's definitely my most romantic song in my life at the moment.
Yeah, it's yeah, she's amazing. I don't know. I feel like I don't know a lot of people who like love her. I don't know. That's like a me problem. Maybe I need better friends. But like I remember when I first heard her and was just kind of like had that same feeling like, who is this? I need to know everything about this. And I don't know, like it shocked me that she's English.
I know. It shocked my friends as well.
I was like, "Wait, what?" but yeah, she's amazing. Like,
yeah,
and her voice, like in this song too, like I love this song. And it's like, I mean, her voice is everything, but the sort of, there's something about this song where it's like, even if you kind of take away like the words in her voice, like, which, why would you do that? Mm-hmm. But even if you do, mm-hmm. it just feels like romance.
Yeah, it does. It's, I mean, live, it's a whole different experience, but it still captures that like slight raspiness, that mm-hmm. slight, like a little more leading into the jazz R&B, the percussion, the like the way they fit into the pocket so well. It's like everything just comes together.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I would love to see her live.
Yes, I hope you can. Yes.
Okay. Well, what is a song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse? Or I guess in this case, an album.
Yes. It's always tough because I've listened to so much music last year, and like there's a lot of different artists that I was like, whoa, okay, like this is pretty incredible. I do like you now, but Chromacopia literally changed my entire view on Tyler the Creator. I never was a hater at all or a doubter, you know, but he was not in my rotation at all. Yeah. That album, I love an album with a story. Yes. Like that. I mean, my music, you know, so like it's like I love when artists do that. I mean, it's one of the reasons I think Lemonade is Beyonce's best album. You know, I love that conceptual idea of sticking with it the whole time. And like there were so many things he was talking about, like with his father and things like that I related to, and the different emotions of each song and the way he told the story of like the past few years of his life. And I don't know. And then also he released that like behind the scene footage of him making the album. And that came out like when I was nearing the end of Five Prayers, and I was like, oh my God, I should have documented. But it just was like, it made me grow so much more of a fan, getting to see his thought process and to see how much he has a hand in his own music.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, wow, like I hope you get like a bigger feature one day so we can take a deeper dive.
Right.
Or like, you know, if he listens to this, right, you know, like I would love to see what you do, right, you know? So, but it's so like, it just had me take such a deeper dive into him as well. And like finding this clip of him talking about like, you know, how to promote your music. And he was like, you have to get rid of that idea of being cringe. Like you worked so hard on this craft. Yeah. You spend so much money. You stress out so much. Why are you afraid to post your song? Why are you afraid of people thinking like you're going to be annoying? Like who cares?
Yeah.
You know, it kind of like rewired my brain going into this rollout. But yeah, that album is so beautiful. I really hope to see it live in July here, at Barclays, and like, we'll see if that happens. But yeah, it just like, that album's incredible. It's incredible. It's incredible. All the features are incredible. Yeah, I don't know. I love it.
Yeah, no, I was never a hater. I liked like a number of his things, but this, I don't know. It was just like, whoa, this is levels above anything I can remember here. Like, and then, yeah, the behind the scenes footage was, I love, like, I'm such a, I don't know, I can nerd out about process and stuff. Like, I love learning about people's, like, their process and their thinking and their, and yeah, just seeing, like, just the whole picture of it, like hearing the album and seeing that. And then it, yeah, it kind of, it blew my mind too. So I, yeah. So our lyrics, thing, an important thing to you, like, do you pay attention to lyrics? Do you?
I do.
Can bad lyrics like ruin a song?
They can.
Isn't that the worst too? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we don't want to talk about bad lyrics. We want to talk about good lyrics. So what are you, what are your favorite lyrics?
Definitely from I'm in Love with Another Man by Jasmine Sullivan.
That's a beautiful song.
Yeah, it is, and it has like spoken true to my life these past years. I have found myself in some relationships that have left its mark. But there was a relationship that happened a year and a half ago. Yeah. It basically where I had to like kind of make a choice. And I was listening to that song so much. And it was like very true. Like, oh, you have this one person that like treats you so well and like just make sure everything's okay and like supports you. And then you have this other person who I wouldn't say did all of that. But you know, like it just like something about them had me leaning towards them more. And I don't know. It's hard. Like you have someone that is in love with you and like you're in love with them. But for some reason, it's just not fully aligning. And this other person just has all of your attention. And I definitely did not make the right decision. But you know, all of it is over now. So it's all okay. But yeah, like that, those lyrics are just so,
well,
it's so real. I feel like Jasmine Sullivan in general, she puts in her music great. What so many people want to say. And it just doesn't happen.
We're going to go on the Patreon section now.
Yeah.
So people who give me a few bucks a month to keep this whole thing going, they get a little bit extra. So what is the last song you completely fell in love with?
Yes, New Girl by Jalen Josey. It's an incredible song. Incredible song. She's so fun. Yeah, I believe her background is like musical theater, but she made this like very, very fun kind of like elements of Whitney Houston dance music. Ooh. With these like deep R&B vocals. It's just, it's a really fun song.
Okay.
It's like, yeah, everyone's saying it's gonna be the song of the summer, and I agree.
Ooh, okay, I haven't heard it, but that I'm ready for summer, so like that'll help. I need to go look it up, and yeah, that'll get me in the mood.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the best hype song?
Right now, so it has changed a lot. It really depends on what is happening in my life. But right now, I would say before a show, if I'm getting hyped before a show, it's definitely going to be Balloons, from Chromacopia with Tyler and Dochi. But day to day, like just kind of like need to pick myself up. Mm-hmm. It's probably going to be something from B-Day by Beyonce. So yeah.
Do you, speaking of before shows, like do you have any pre-show rituals or like things that you, something you have to do before every show to feel
Oh, yes. I have to have silence. Like, do not come in this dressing room. Like, the way Dochi yelled at people, it would be so much worse. Oh. And it has been in the past. Because I always pray. I just take time for myself. Mm-hmm. And I played this festival a couple months ago. And they were like, oh, do you want to go to the dressing room? And I was like, yeah, like, I need a few minutes. And then they're like, okay, we'll be right back. Like, we'll, you know, when we're ready. And I was like, yeah, okay. And they literally knocked on the door like 20 seconds later. Like, no bullshit. Like, I was like, huh? And they're like, yeah, actually, we are. Like, it's time.
Oh.
And I was so unpleased. I was like, okay. Like, I just went so cold. I was so tired.
Oh, my gosh.
And the show was great. Yeah. But I was just like, I didn't get to center myself. So that's, like, super important to me, getting to pray before and just, like, having a talk with myself, my people, my inner people, my outer people, and, like, just, yeah, just feeling, like, into the world I need to be to play this music. And, but something I have stopped doing is making such a big deal of my shows. Like, and what I mean by that is, like, I don't know, kind of being like, I don't want to talk to anyone today. I'm focused. You know, when I've done that, when I was like starting to perform live, I would get so nervous in the end. And now, like, what's coming up? Oh, my tour. Yeah, my tour's coming up, and like, I'm playing X Jazz next on the 17th. So yeah, like in a week. And a couple years ago, I would approach that with like, do not talk to me before the show. But now I'm like, okay, cool. Well, I'm gonna go in the dressing room, have the wine, you know, like I'll go on stage. It's just, I approach everything from such just like chill mindset now. It just makes the performing so much more fun. And I can lock in easier to this headspace that I need to, because I'm not so focused on this like fucking persona of what I think an artist should be before a show. Yeah. I'm just like still myself. So that has been like very nice. Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, that's the thing back to what you're saying, we got like 20 seconds. Those are those moments like, okay, I'm a professional. I'm going to go do a badass show anyway. Exactly. Like, but goddamn,
everybody out there. People are just doing their job. It's right. Not aligned with my happiness, but it is what it is. Yeah.
All right. Well, what is the song that means the most to you? And it's not necessarily because the song itself might just, you associate it with something or somebody. Or... Oh,
yes. Okay. So let's get deep. So, okay. Dog Days Are Over by Florence and the Machine. And whenever like this question gets asked, people are like, what? You know? So I suffer from bipolar disorder, you know, and that's something I've talked about in like many talks with people, podcasts and stuff. And as you get older, it literally gets so much worse in different ways in every person. The way it's been getting worse for myself has not been fun. But since I would say about, I think this goes all the way back to undergrad when I first got diagnosed, if I'm ever in that headspace where I need to call them people, I will put this song on, and it's like my last resort. Like, this is my last hurrah before I go to hospital or something. Like, I'm at like my lowest. I don't know what it is about this song, but that white woman put crack in this shit. Like, it is so fun. Like, it just always lifts me up, and I sing it and like all of this. And one of my exes, when I was living in San Diego, he came over once like I was in a tizzy, and he was like, are you listening to Florence and the Machine? I was like, don't question it. Like, just don't question it. Like, if you ever see me playing this song, just know I am, this is rock bottom. So, yeah, like that song means so, so much to me. It just has, it has never been tainted. I mean, unfortunately, I can't like listen to it in leisure, you know, now, but like it, that is a very, very, very important song to my health, literally. So,
wow. Yeah. I mean, there's something like kind of ecstatic about it. I don't even know like that feeling you're describing. Yeah. It's, I don't know what it is. There's crack in it. That's really what it is.
Exactly. So,
wow. Okay. Well, last question. At least in this moment in time, because maybe it changes, but maybe this is always the answer. What is your favorite song?
Yes, I did like really go through all of my Spotify to figure that out. And like, I narrowed it down to a lot. And then I was like, no, Losing You by Solange. Mm. Like her, the way she orchestrates her music and produces, and the way Dev Hynes, the collab, the Blood Orange collab on this. So it's like the perfect song. It's so fun. The message is so sad, you know, but like, Such a fun song. Such a fun song. And with being a romantic, you know, you need right? you need music to accompany your life. So it's like this real? One fits very well. It's just so fun. And like, yeah. I know, especially in this last year, it's losing you, not even meaning like a partner, it even means like kind of part of myself. I'm turning 30 this year, and like so much has changed in my 20s for the better and for the worse. I remember like when I was starting off like 21, 22, and people would be like, oh my God, you're such a baby. I was like, I have bills, you know? But like now I'm like, my students are 20 to 22, and I'm like, y'all are my children, you know? So it's very interesting. Yeah. But the person I was at 20, if that person saw me now, firstly, they would be like, so you transitioned. But secondly, they would be like, wow, so much has changed. Like, so much has changed for, like, literally all for the better. So, yeah, that song just always makes me feel very happy, very summer, very, I don't know, just it makes me feel good. And I think that's kind of, that's yeah. the point of music. Yes. Feel something.
Absolutely. No, I love this song. Solange and Dev together is magic.
Just magic, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we made it. We got through.
We did.
So Five Prayers out on May 16th. Do you have like release shows or anything coming up that you want to mention?
Yeah. So for your European listeners, I'm doing a short European tour. From Berlin, Amsterdam, Cologne, and Frankfurt, in 2 weeks, starting on the 17th through 23rd. I'm doing an A-Man listening party at Light Sound Design System in Greenpoint, Brooklyn on May 29th. Those tickets are still available. Then some other festivals. But yeah, if you're in New York, come to the Met on June 21st. It will be a hoot. I will be very happy. It's a dream come true. So yeah, a lot of that's happening. There's a big tour happening in November that I'll announce later. Awesome. But yeah, so that's kind of what's happening now. And I just hope people enjoy the record. Vinyls are coming. Again, $5 and a fucking dream. So like they will be here eventually. But they are in the works, and yeah, so I'm very excited, and I hope everyone really enjoys this project.
Thank you to Joy Guidry. Five Prayers, out now. So good! Oh, it's so good. I can't. yeah. I love it. As always, you can listen to all her picks, link in the show notes. There's a link to her to the album, to her website, all those things. And yeah, there's actually a listening party on Bandcamp too for Five Prayers on May 29th. So that could be fun. I might try to pop into that. Yeah, I just, you know, I love hearing people talk about their work or seeing, I mean, yeah, anyway, I'm rambling. I'm too caffeinated. Thank you all for listening. If you enjoy the show, please leave a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps a lot. If you enjoy it even a little bit extra, you can join the Patreon, patreon.com/foxdigitalis. For as little as $3 a month, you get longer episodes, you get them a little bit early, and you get a bunch of other stuff too. And yeah, I just appreciate it. And until next time, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.